Beginning recording number 102, case number 67, goats. As always, this is Elliot Tree recording in case of an apocalypse. Okay, Elliot Tree and goats.
There are more goats here than I expected.
Haven't you been keeping up with the news? These goats are crazy newsworthy. I mean, this is the first time I've seen an event covered in the daily paper, Sinclair conspiracies, and your mom's weekly email updates.
Wait, my mom sends you weekly emails? Why don't I get them?
Well, it makes sense you don't get them. It's kind of an exclusive club.
What you just heard was from Elliot Tree's Compendium of Mysteries, a podcast where unusual mysteries call for out-of-the-box thinking. Elliot Tree makes it her business to expect the outlandish and seek out the supernatural, much to the chagrin of her skeptical intern. Together, they might just crack the impossible. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, lovely listener. If you've been paying attention at all, you may be a little confused as to why you're about to listen to an episode about The Dark Knight instead of Abominable. I won't bore you with the details, but basically, technical issues. I know, lame. But hey, you get to listen to our super amazing Dark Knight episode several days early, so no complaining. And then you can look forward to an Abominable episode on Monday. Just think of it as a little switcheroo. And next week, Joker, as planned. Promise. Okay, that's all. Enjoy the show. Hello, and welcome to Nerd Critic, a podcast about movies from the dual perspective of critical nerdiness. My name is Jordan.
And I am CJ. Jordan is our studied and credentialed critic. And usually, you ask me what I'm wearing. I know this is an off-the-shelf episode, but usually you ask me what I'm wearing, but I'm not going to let you. I'm going to ask you what you're wearing today,
CJ,
Jordan.
CJ, what are you wearing today?
No, I'm wearing a Doom Patrol shirt. But what are you wearing, Jordan?
That's a Doom Patrol shirt? It looks really cool.
It is a cool Doom Patrol shirt.
That makes me want to like watch Doom Patrol.
Oh, well, good. I think that's the goal of the shirt.
Cool.
Yeah. What are you wearing?
So today we're talking... I'm actually wearing a Star Wars shirt. And, you know, it's nice that you brought this up because I was actually thinking about doing, like, a Nerd Critic nonsense on this shirt. But
instead, you're
bringing it up now, which makes this kind of like some bonus content for our non-premium listeners.
That's true.
So it's your lucky day, guys. my anniversary was this last weekend.
Congratulations.
Thank you. 6 years. This was one of my gifts, was this shirt for my wife.
And it's a Star Wars shirt.
It's a Star Wars shirt. It's the classic Star Wars logo with like the, it's like the black and white kind of, what do you call this? This black and white kind of cutout. Like you've got the Star Wars logo and then you've got the silhouettes of Luke and Leia, et cetera, cut out. And it's very, very classic. You see,
you've seen it all over the place.
A billion times.
Yeah.
And on the back.
What makes the shirt cool.
Yes. Is the opening scroll?
Yes,
from
A New Hope,
from Star Wars: A New Hope.
Yeah, it's just the whole thing. Yeah, it's just the whole thing. That's on your back.
Yep,
that's really cool.
Thank you. I was just so grateful and full of love when my
she knows you well.
Yeah, she does. Yeah. She does know me well. It was a very good gift.
Sweet. You should really thank the person that babysat for you so that you could go on
CJ and his wife babysat for us while we went on our anniversary date. It was lovely.
How kind of you to bring it up. Okay, today this is an off-the-shelf episode,
yes.
Which means that we are pulling a movie literally off the shelf.
And in this case, for me, and maybe for you, literally a Blu-ray on my shelf that I pulled off my shelf.
Mine was a digital pulling off of the shelf.
And we'll talk about mine then.
But I did literally pull off the shelf, literally, the copy of the Blu-ray that the winner of our Nerd Critic Showdown is going to get.
Oh, snap. Okay, yeah. So first of all, we're covering The Dark Knight today. Which, have we talked about that? Have we said those words on this episode?
I don't think so.
It's in the title, so people know. But we're covering The Dark Knight. I am so excited.
It's about time.
It is about time. And before, I mean, we're going to talk about the contest in just a hot second. But I just want to say, I did rewatch this movie. I rewatched it hard. And am so prepared to talk about this movie.
I also rewatched this movie.
So excited. Anyway, but on to the thing that people care about.
Okay, so if you're listening to this and you have listened to previous episodes, then you know that we are celebrating our 100th episode. Our next episode.
Yeah.
Our next episode. This is the 99th episode. Yes. And so what we did is I personally created a comic book movie trivia quiz. And you could go on to nerdcriticpodcast.com and you could take this quiz. And what we did is we ran it for about 10 days and you could go on there. And then for those that got the highest score, we had a tie. But for those who had the highest score, we drew a name randomly. And that person, that lucky person, not only gets several hundred dollars worth of swag, Batman swag, they also get to come on the show and have a one-on-one versus comic book trivia showdown against yours truly.
That's CJ, everyone.
That's me.
CJ, resident nerd.
The resident nerd. And
who's preparing to put his title on the line.
Yes. And so we had several hundred entries, and there were three people that got a perfect score. So what I did is I pulled randomly the winner's name of those three people, and I want to do an honorable mention for the two that got a perfect score but did not win the swag prize.
I just want to emphasize this.
Only three people
out of hundreds of contestants actually got a perfect score.
Yeah. How about that?
Well, I don't feel as bad about my score now.
You did pretty good.
I got like 11
of 15 ain't bad. And so out of those three, we had so these are the two that did not win. You had Zach Mastrullo. Well done, sir.
Well done, Zach.
Well done.
Yep.
To go online and to take this quiz and stuff off the top of your head.
To not win.
And that sucks. It's true. It does. And then Alan Myers as well. Also didn't win. But again, well done.
Yeah. You get an attaboy.
You get an attaboy.
You get a shout out on probably the most popular podcast in the world.
Probably ever.
Well, I mean, certainly ever.
Currently and then
future
and past.
Yeah, I don't see how anyone else is going to
compete. No way. But the winner of the Nerd Critic, and I'm going to call it annual. We're going to do this every year.
Or every month.
Or every
year.
No. The annual
Nerd Critic Trivia Showdown.
Showdown
is way better.
Is Mr. Jack Taggart. I want to play like applause.
Okay. We'll get applause. Nice.
All right, cool.
Yep.
Well done. I have contacted Jack. He has claimed his victory and his swag, and we have organized for him to come onto our show and have a showdown with me.
Oh my gosh.
So here we are.
It's really exciting.
It happened.
Yep.
So yeah, congratulations, Jack.
How satisfying for him.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, a perfect score.
Perfect score. You know, you thought you were, you felt guilty, Jack. You felt guilty for wasting your time reading comic books and studying things about movies and just absorbing trivia. And now, finally, you can prove to everyone, your parents, your family, your friends, your coworkers.
It was worth it.
It was so worth it.
Indeed. All right. Should we talk about The Dark Knight?
We better.
Kind of why people are listening?
We had better start talking about The Dark Knight. Here's the thing about The Dark Knight. Can I tell you about the thing about The Dark Knight, CJ?
What is the thing?
The thing about The Dark Knight is that everyone and their dog has reviewed and analyzed and revisited and scrutinized this movie to death. Last year was the 10-year anniversary, and there were all those like 10-year anniversary type articles and podcast episodes and YouTube videos and on and on and on. And I just wonder what we possibly could add to the conversation.
Well, do you have something to offer, or are you just going to throw out that
question? No, I'm throwing that out there. I do not know. I mean, I know what I want to talk about, but I'm like, just realistically, we are entering a very we're starting down a very well-traveled road.
Sure.
This is a hard-packed, beaten path. There is very little room for trailblazing here. Yeah. I don't think there's any. I think we're just sure. walking across a field that a lot of other people have walked across.
Yeah.
The one nice thing is that, well, actually, I take that back. I was going to say, I don't know how many people are talking about The Dark Knight right now, but probably lots of people are also talking about The Dark Knight right now
because
Joker is coming out, naturally. Anyway, whatever, you're listening to us. This is our show, and you're going to have to just deal with however many things we say you've heard before. So, sorry.
Yeah, that's fine. I do kind of have a lot to say about the character of Joker.
Okay.
Because we're doing this, obviously, because we love the movie, but also the Joker comes out. When this airs, the Joker will have, it's out.
I think it's just Joker, CJ.
Just Joker.
You work for DC.
Yeah, you're right.
Straighten up and fly right, my friend. There is no excuse for that kind of negligence.
I have things to say, but that's fine. It's fine.
Okay. Well, let's find out what you have to say. I think we should start with a list of questions.
Oh.
And we should try to answer those questions to the best of our ability.
Okay.
Do you want to hear what those questions are?
Yeah. Are you asking and I'm answering?
I'm asking this question of us.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
We get to answer this question together.
This feels unfair because I feel like you've prepared, but it's fine. I'm ready.
Well, it sounds like you prepared too.
I mean, I prepared to talk about what I wanted to talk about.
Well, so have I. I'm just hijacking the conversation.
That's fine.
Haven't you been here for like a year and a half? Don't you know how this works?
That's fair. All right. I'm ready.
Here's the first question. Is this The Dark Knight the best comic book movie ever? Starting off easy.
Is The Dark Knight the best comic book movie ever? All right.
Gut reaction.
Yes. I said it.
Okay, good.
All right, yeah.
I would say the same thing.
Yeah.
Because, and you know why? Because I just watched it again. And the thing about this movie is that you can not watch it for a while and watch a lot of other comic book movies and watch a lot of other really good comic book movies.
Yeah.
And you can be like, I don't know, was The Dark Knight the best comic movie ever? Because this movie's really good, or that movie's really good. And you start to think about all these movies and all their best features.
Yeah.
And then you watch The Dark Knight and you're like, oh, yeah. It's like if you get used to diet drinks and then you have something with real sugar, you're like, oh yeah, that's what it tastes like.
Yeah, the only reason that I hesitate is because to ask that question is really difficult because comic book movies can kind of run the gambit, right? You can have like 1978 Superman,
yep,
with Christopher Reeves,
yep,
holds such a dear place in the hope and fun place in my heart.
Very popular.
That is not occupied by The Dark Knight because they're not the same in any way, shape, or form.
Sure.
So it's hard to compare those two. But I think as far as storytelling, as far as tightly knit, as far as entertainment value, The Dark Knight is better. I'm sorry. I can feel so many nerds just like,
no, well, painfully. The thing is I think a reasonable majority of people, and not even like if you asked 100 people, 51 of them would say that yes. But the thing is that no other movie is going to capture as much of the vote.
Yeah.
So if you were to take 100 people. None of the Marvel movies? No. If you were to take 100 people and ask them if The Dark Knight is the best movie ever, some 20 to 30 of them or even 15 of them would say yes. But all the rest of them would be spread across all so many other movies.
Sure.
So
it would have the highest percentage.
It would have the highest percentage count. No matter what.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right.
Yeah.
So yes.
So we're just being basic by saying yes.
Yeah, we are. Next question.
Is there an argument to be made for it not being the best comic book movie ever?
I'm sure that there is. And I'm sure that somebody's going to comment somewhere on the internet that their argument of why it's not. And I welcome that. But let's leave it to that.
Let's leave it
format.
To someone else.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, second question, fairly easy after the first question.
Sure.
Is this the best Batman movie?
Oh, yeah. Forget no question. Yeah.
I have to say, though, I have to give a shout out to
Batman v Superman.
Well, obviously, yes.
I mean, obviously. If there's a contender.
Yeah. Batman v Superman was, it was my favorite movie. Batman from 1980. Oh, I forget the year, but the Tim Burton. Tim Burton, Michael
1989.
Keaton, 1989. That movie is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it is.
Pretty amazing. The mm-hmm. Art Deco, the, like, Jack Nicholson's version of Joker, which is totally different and totally awesome. Mm-hmm. And, like, Michael Keaton, who, next question, is Christian Bale the best Batman? I say no.
Christian Bale,
Christian
the,
Bale
best Batman.
The best Batman. I'm going to say no.
I'll say no.
All right.
I'll say no.
Who's your choice?
See, I'm
Ben
gonna,
Affleck.
I'm just going to
obviously.
I'm just going to be basic here. But Michael Keaton.
It's Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
It's got to be
Michael
Keaton.
Which everyone's like, yeah, if you grew up with in that era, then Michael Keaton's your favorite. The thing is, I didn't grow up in that era. Not really. Like, Christian Bale was my Batman.
Yeah, sure.
But if you watch
those Batman movies,
Michael Keaton
is
which
amazing.
Is a surprise. Yeah.
So, agreed. Which is cool. I think it's really cool that's true.
Yeah.
Christian Bale's Batman. This is sort of like about The Dark Knight. We're talking about The Dark Knight. Christian Bale's Batman is too Christian Bale-y, I think, and also. He's not that interesting of a Batman, I don't think. It's like of all the roles...
I mean, I still put him at number two.
Of all the... Yeah, sure. Yes, absolutely. But, like, of all the roles that Christian Bale has played, I think I like him as Batman the least.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I love Christian Bale. He's great.
Yeah, I do too.
He's a really phenomenal actor. I watched Vice earlier this year.
Oh, yeah.
That man is insane. he was Dick Cheney.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
It's amazing.
I
think that there is an applause I feel Christian Bale deserves for playing the Batman that he did. Because I think that he does do pretty well at the Playboy and then at the when I was rewatching it just recently, when he's throwing a fundraiser for Harvey Dent and he's in the party and he walks in with the girls.
Yeah,
and he gives the speech and then he walks outside and then he's all broody. It's a pretty good switch.
Yeah, sure.
And Michael Keaton does it better, which is why he's, I think, number one.
Yes.
But Christian Bale, I think, is a close two.
Sure. This is jumping again a little bit, and we'll talk a little bit more about but I'm just gonna tease the end of the episode, and I'm gonna say I'm really curious to see what Robert Pattinson does with it. Okay, so next question. Is this Christopher Nolan's best movie?
No.
Okay.
These are hard questions. I'm gonna say no. I'm gonna put it at number two, but I think Inception is better.
Okay. I think I agree. I don't know if I agree that Inception is better. I also have not been able to pick a best Christopher Nolan movie yet. I need to go back and rewatch
a couple
of them.
There's also The Prestige. Holy crap.
So The Prestige, I think, is like if there's a gun to my head, I think I would say Prestige.
Say that one?
Yeah.
Which I don't blame you. So, it's hard.
All right. Next question.
Okay.
And we're coming to the end of this list, so don't worry. Is Heath Ledger the best Joker?
No comment.
Ooh. Oh, no. Oh no. Okay. Well, let's just let that question be out in the world.
Okay.
Because
we will answer that later.
Okay. So at the end of this episode we're going to be talking about the movie coming up, but we're not talking about Joker the movie that we're talking about next week. We're not going to talk about that on this episode. Should I tell them that you've seen it already?
That's fine.
CJ has seen this movie already. I have not seen Joker. I was not invited. We can talk about that later too. We don't have to do it on the show, but
yeah, but we can talk about it.
So CJ has some opinions about Joker. I will say, having not seen Joker, Heath Ledger is easily the best Joker. I mean, it's not much of a contest. There's been several iterations. Almost all of them have been good, with the exception possibly of Jared Leto, who I didn't see because I did not watch Suicide Squad. Will not ever watch Suicide Squad. But Heath Ledger's Joker is a triumph of creativity. It is such a good performance. It is show-stopping. It is so good. And I know, so
The Dark Knight is one of those movies that people have talked about so much, and Heath Ledger's performance is one of those performances that people have talked about so much that it sounds like trite and uninteresting to say that it's so good. But like, if when you watch it, you're like, well, that's why. The reason that people have talked about this so much is because it literally, it demands to be talked about. It's like this is one of those performances, one of those roles, one of those seminal moments in, like, especially, I will say, blockbuster history, comic book movie history. Like, this is it, man. Like, Heath Ledger's Joker was really something else.
There's a production story of Alfred, played by Michael Caine, when Joker shows up to Harvey Dent's fundraiser to, well, kill Harvey Dent because he's killing some people. When the elevator doors open, Alfred was supposed to say something. Right there, when Joker and his goons walk in, he was supposed to say something. But that was the first time that Michael Caine had seen Heath Ledger as the Joker.
Oh, wow.
And so when he walked in, Michael Caine actually says, "I forgot every bloody word." Because he was so bloody terrifying. And there's actually no word. They didn't reshoot it. It just, like, didn't happen. But he just kind of stood there, kind of froze, because the Joker's presence was felt.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that cool?
That's very cool.
Yeah.
So, you know what? That's basically the end of my list. I was going to say, is Michael Caine the best Alfred?
Yes.
Is Hans Zimmer the best composer for a Batman movie?
Yes.
I am happy to just give the baton to you, CJ, because we've started talking about the Joker, and that's what you mostly want to talk about, and I want to hear what you have to say.
Okay. Well, the Joker. It's gone both ways over time. That we're aware. Okay. I don't know where it currently is. The name of the movie is Joker, so I'm guessing it's not the Joker. But then in, like, books that are, like, encyclopedias of all the characters, Joker.
What to call.
Yeah, it's Joker. The Joker or just Joker. I don't know. So I'm going to say the Joker.
I think it's the Joker.
Because it rolls off a little easier.
Although it's getting to be one of those words that sounds funny in the mouth now.
Because we've said it too many times.
Yep.
Anyway, yes. Okay, so the history of the Joker is really quite interesting. And one of the reasons that I love The Dark Knight, the iteration of the Joker and The Dark Knight so much, is because I'm going to tell you the origin story of the Joker. You ready?
Hit me.
That's it. That was it. We don't know. And it's one of the coolest reasons that I like the Joker. There have been some origin stories told.
That was quite a smirk. I just want you guys to know. CJ really gave me quite a smirk.
I was so proud of that moment.
You should be. You got me.
There have been a couple origins of the Joker told, but they rarely are in continuity, and it's changed a couple times, and so we don't actually have a full-fledged, like, Batman's parents were killed in an alley kind of origin for the Joker. And so the fact that Heath Ledger in this movie and the writing led to him telling multiple stories that were equally as eerie and creepy, but were obviously total lies, was fascinating, because he's one of the characters that we don't actually need an origin for. Because what he does kind of illustrates what he stands for and who he is more than where he came from, which is fascinating, because Batman is defined, right? He is defined by, that's why we've seen the guy come into the alley, they're leaving the theater, shoot the pearls, all of that. We've seen that so many times because that moment defines Batman. But the Joker is kind of the exact opposite, and we don't really need... we don't need an origin for him to understand.
Well, I love that you're pointing that out, because that's totally what Chris Nolan did with this story. Is he set them as a yin and yang of the same kind of character. So Batman and Joker, and Joker calls us out in the end of the movie. He's like, we're the same. It's chaos versus order. It's restraint versus non-restraint. What is the word I'm looking for? Inhibition, disinhibition. I don't know, whatever. Anyway, they couldn't be more different, but they're polar opposites in a way that makes them match perfectly. Yeah. So the fact that Batman is defined entirely by his backstory, Joker then doesn't have a backstory and exists as this sort of tornado of chaos.
Yeah. So, because you have, so this, the way that this movie is structured is that you have, it's the second movie. So we've seen Batman introduced to the city, right? And then this movie starts with Batman is full fledged Batman. He's going, criminals see the bat signal and they're like, nope, I'm done. I'm walking away, because they're scared of him. And then you have these criminals, this mob that is obviously a vast and large network with somebody in like Hong Kong that's controlling stuff. Yeah. So it's obviously this large network is feeling threatened. And one of the first things that happens in this movie is that because Batman goes and gets that accountant and brings him to Gotham, Harvey Dent is then able to arrest like 500 of them. Right. And so Batman is kind of, through force, restoring order to Gotham. Mm-hmm. And then these guys who kind of end up like, we're being threatened. 500 of us got arrested.
It was an existential threat to them.
Yeah. So what they
do... Batman was winning.
Batman was winning. So what they do is they essentially hire this demon that is the Joker, right? Mm-hmm. And the Joker comes in and offers services, and then they reject it, but then he proves that they actually need it. So they end up basically hiring this evil force, but they didn't fully understand what this force does. Mm-hmm. And so what the Joker wanted to do was kind of Alfred's big speech of some people just want to watch the world burn. Batman believes in order through force, right? Through justice, through the enforcement of it. Mm-hmm. Joker believes that justice and morals and ethics and the entire society that we build around those ethics is
meaningless.
Meaningless, aka it's a joke, if you will.
It's a joke, yeah.
And so what he does, most bad guys, and this is one of the reasons that the Joker is so legendary, most bad guys do bad things, right? They do bad things. Some would call them evil. There's a lot of discussion on what the meaning of evil means, what it actually is. But it's kind of agreed that evil is not necessarily bad things. It's kind of the darkness isn't actually a thing. It's just the absence of light. Evil isn't an actual thing. It's just the absence of good.
Of virtue. Like a person who lacks virtue tends to be evil. Like a person who is selfish or is immature or petty or vengeful, like they lack the virtues that sort of like refine those away from a person, and therefore they do quote unquote evil.
Evil. Yeah. So you have other bad guys that do bad things. They blow stuff up, they kill people, they do bad things. That's not who the Joker is. If Batman is order through the enforcement of it, Joker is chaos through the invitation of it, meaning he doesn't do bad things. He creates circumstances so that people betray these so-called ethics and morals that they have, and they prove that they're actually how fragile those morals are, and that they're actually evil.
Yeah, and he loves turning people's intentions against them.
Yes,
so which is handled so perfectly. He's like he's the judo master of this thing, literally turning people's intentions on themselves. So like, I mean, I think one of the coolest microcosmic scenes of this that kind of like illustrates this is the pencil trick, right?
The pencil trick.
It's like he's not the aggressor. He puts the pencil here because he knows that somebody's going to go and try to strong arm him out of the room. And he sees it coming. He knows exactly what's going to happen. So he plants the pencil on the desk and he says, "Want to see a magic trick?" And he's like, "Watch this pencil disappear." And then right at the right moment, it's like the most stunning performance ever, right? Yeah. Because he knows the exact timing where this guy's going to come over and he's going to use his own momentum to put his head on the desk and then kill him with a pencil. So it's an incredible moment, and it is the perfect illustration of exactly what the Joker does, which is I know exactly what you're going to do, and I'm going to make what you do hurt you the most.
Yeah. Yeah, and then he laughs at it, and he's a joker, and he laughs at it because, according to him, it doesn't matter.
Yep.
None of it matters. There is no structure.
Yep.
So right, wrong, up, down doesn't actually matter. So him showing them a trick and making so light of a human's death is because it doesn't actually matter. And he's trying to prove the entire movie that it doesn't actually matter, that structure is purely false, and he's going to prove it. So he proves it by the fairies, the two fairies, right? One's loaded with criminals, one's loaded with civilians, and he gives them the opportunity. He doesn't blow them up, right? That's what other villains would do in other comic books. Yep. He gives them the chance to prove to themselves and everybody else that they are naturally looking out for themselves, and their so-called morals of not killing
don't matter. Yep.
Right? He does this by forcing people, hey, if you don't kill this one guy, I'm going to blow up a hospital. Proving that anybody will kill and they're like justifying their actions.
Normal people will kill.
Normal people.
People who consider themselves good citizens will kill given the right incentive or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And his whole plan at the beginning is I'm going to kill people if Batman doesn't reveal himself, thus proving that it's so easy to get people to turn on Batman because everyone is one bad day from becoming what the Joker is. Now, that was a perfect segue. High five, CJ, perfect segue. There's a book that is commonly referred to as the source material for this movie. It's Alan Moore's The Killing Joke. And The Killing Joke is a great graphic novel, and it's also been made into an animated movie. And what happens in this story is Alan Moore, the writer, was trying to get across that the Joker believes that everybody can end up being like the Joker because they naturally kind of are, and that they're one bad experience, one bad day from betraying all of these morals and codes that they seemingly follow and just giving up. And so he takes spoilers. He shoots Barbara Gordon, who's Batgirl, and paralyzes her, and then he takes Jim Gordon. And he puts him through just the most horrendous experiences. And when he reveals that he has Jim Gordon to Batman, he says, "Behold the normal man." And he's trying to prove that if he can get Jim Gordon to go through the worst day, that Jim Gordon, the normal man, will betray all of his morals and become just like the Joker. Right? So this then brings me to Two-Face, which is exactly what Joker proved with Two-Face, where he geniusly creates this situation where Harvey Dent, who is selfless, who is the White Knight, they refer to him as the White Knight, he's the face of what Batman is trying to do. And he's selfless, and he's strong, and he's independent, and he's smart, and he's dedicated. And the Joker creates this situation so that Harvey Dent's in one place, Rachel is in another place. Harvey loves Rachel, and he then tricks Batman, who he knows will go after Rachel, switches it, tells him that they're opposite. The Batman goes after who he thinks is Rachel. He actually saves Dent, and Rachel dies, right? So now Harvey Dent is in the hospital. Half of his face is burnt. Batman just did the exact opposite of what Harvey Dent wanted. He's not sure how he feels about Batman anymore, which previously he did nothing but respect him and loved him. And now he's all conflicted. And the Joker comes in and he says stuff like he's trying to prove that these morals that he has held on to can go away in a second. That he's just one bad day from becoming just like him. And he says stuff like, "Look what I did to this city with a few drums of gas and a couple of bullets," trying to prove how fragile it is. He's also said, "I showed the schemers how pathetic their plans are to control people. You were one of the schemers, but look where you are now. Proving you tried, you did everything that you possibly could. I walk in with just a few bullets and a few things of gas, and look where you are." And then what happens is that Two-Face becomes literally, like, he becomes two people. He becomes Batman on one side, and he becomes Joker on the other. And he leaves that hospital room saying, saying to the Joker with the gun against his head, says, "This side you live, this side you die," and he flips the coin. He's essentially saying, "I can see both sides. I get it. I'm going to let fate decide.
Yeah.
I'm going to flip this coin, and in that moment, I'm either Batman or I'm Joker," which is why Harvey Dent and Two-Face in this movie, written in this, where he was written, I think is so ingenious. A lot of people will throw down on Two-Face as a weak part of this movie. I completely disagree.
I think that you are right completely.
Thank
about,
you.
I really think that you have explained and revealed the mechanical workings of this movie in a way that I think is profound and totally spot on. Really, really, really good stuff. I am one of the people who thinks that Two-Face is a weak part of this movie. And what I think the one-line summary for me of Two-Face as a construct in this movie is that it's a really great idea executed a little sloppily.
Okay.
And so this is the one thing, and there's always something. This is the issue with me and Christopher Nolan movies. There's always something that I'm like, ah, it just like cankers me. And I think in The Dark Knight, it's definitely the main thing that cankers me is Two-Face. There's a few reasons. Some of them are kind of shallow, still not like unimportant. Like, for instance, I'll start with a shallow one and then I'll move down. The shallow one is, I think that the effect of Two-Face, like his makeup, the CG thing that was done with his face to make him into Two-Face, looks cartoony. And it's supposed to be hideous and terrifying, and it is, but also it doesn't look like it belongs in this movie.
Yeah.
Because the whole movie, we've seen stuff that looks gritty and realistic and feels super, super grounded. And now we see a guy whose most of his flesh has gone off of his face, and frankly, he looks like something out of a monster movie.
Yeah.
I'm not going to connect with it that way. It's not going
to
happen.
I get that. I've heard people say that it shouldn't be Two-Face. It should be Half-Face. It's like, he still needs to have a face, make it mutated, but they took away the face.
So the hard thing there for me is that it's like, yeah, you can make his face look horrible and disfigured and burnt without making it look like that. You know, also, like, we're going to start to strain credulity about how you can reasonably, like, still be awake and alive with a face that looks like that. It's like, I feel like your brain's going to come out, man. Like, your eye's just going to fall out.
Or, how's your eye still working? Yeah.
So that kind of stuff is troubling. I think that was taken way too far and in kind of the wrong direction, which it sounds shallow, and it is, but also stuff like that is a little bit of a death mark for this kind of a thing. Like, if you're making a movie that is so consistent and so perfectly formed and so, like, everything works together, and then at the very end you introduce that element, and if it doesn't work, it's going to be a problem.
Sure,
it's
kind of like throws you out of it.
Yeah, it's kind of like having a romantic comedy where, like, the lead actor's hair is bad. It's like, I'm going to have a hard time. I'm going to have a really hard time with your mulleted, like, main character. You know, your romantic lead, your heartthrob has a giant, like, gnarly mullet. I'm going to have a really hard time. That's kind of what happens here. I don't think it's like, it doesn't ruin the movie, but, like, it definitely detracts. The bigger problem, I think, is that the relationship between Harvey and Rachel was not established in a way that I feel like is emotionally compelling. So that when she dies, all I see is him acting really upset.
And
I do not feel it.
I completely agree with you. The one thing that you said cankers you?
Yeah.
Cankers you. The one thing that cankers me, I don't think I've ever used that word before. The one thing that cankers me is Rachel. Which I would put this on a Rachel problem, not necessarily Two. I get that Rachel is essential to Two-Face's arc. But Rachel, as far as I know, and you can prove me wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm right, is not a comic character. She's not a thing. She has no history with Batman. So they wrote her in specifically for this. And my thought is there's a lot of good characters that you can pull from that are tied to Two-Face in one way or another. It didn't have to be this extra character that you wrote in.
Yeah, sure. That's true. I feel like, they wanted some continuity between Batman Begins and The Dark Knight, obviously. Maybe recast Rachel, so that's something. But I don't know. I don't have any problem with Rachel specifically. I have a problem with just the way that she is supposed to relate to the two leads, you know, to Batman and to Two-Face, to Bruce Wayne and to Harvey Dent. This is supposed to be a love triangle.
Yeah.
And I just don't feel it, like, really ever. Like, there's a couple of scenes where, like, it kind of seems to matter. But even in, and this is the thing that's really frustrating, even in the scenes where, like, you see them together and they're, like, the three of them in the same room and they're supposed to be interacting in a way that's, like, you know, oh, like,
tense.
Yeah, tense. Yeah. Like, there's a love triangle here. They're not talking about the love triangle. They're talking about Batman.
Yeah,
they're having a discussion about Batman, which could work, but it's not played that way. It's not played in a way that has Harvey Dent and Bruce Wayne competing for Rachel's interest. That's not how it's playing at all.
Yeah, Harvey Dent's kind of won.
Harvey Dent feels like a winner, and so it's hard for me to feel the emotional need for Rachel, mm-hmm. that I would need to feel vicariously through Harvey Dent to then have that paid off when she's killed.
Yeah, I get
so
that.
So instead, all I see is a lot of yelling, you mm-hmm. know? He's like, no, Rachel, no. And I'm like, Aaron Eckhart, you're a good actor, but like, I'm not with you. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal, because in order to really get Two-Face, in order to really feel that thing that you were just talking about, which is so good mechanically, you have to have that emotional foundation. And I don't think it's there. So, and I think that's a Nolan problem. I think that's a Nolan problem because we haven't seen...
Which Nolan?
Christopher Nolan. Okay. Maybe Jonathan Nolan. I don't know. We haven't seen, like, good romance in any of his movies.
That's true.
I mean, the Prestige had some romance, but mostly it's like, it's mechanical. It's like,
it was also like, literally, it was supposed to be bad romance.
Yeah. Like, he hasn't really, I mean, there, like, I'd say Inception was like maybe an exception, but that's a weird thing too.
Because yeah, it's also not
like a real person. Like, there hasn't ever been like a really dynamic, beautiful, like romantic thing happening between two characters in any of Christopher Nolan's movies. And purportedly that's going to change with his next movie. So I'm really interested to see that.
Cool.
But that's frustrating, because I think that was a really key element to make The Dark Knight a basically perfect movie.
Yeah.
But instead we get something that like is really beautiful on paper and like really totally works thematically, but that like I spend the last 20 minutes of the movie not really feeling it as much.
Interesting.
I'm just like not there.
I mean, I can understand that. I know that Two-Face's arc or Harvey Dent's arc is a little under satisfying, specifically because of his, like, I remember the switch. I remember feeling like that switch was really, it was a switch. It was really quick.
Yeah.
It feels fast.
Unearned.
And like really, because you're taking Harvey Dent, who is the White Knight, and turning him into this twisted split personality, it's a really big switch. And so the attachment has to be really significant for you to be on board.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. So, it's such a dramatic shift for his character.
It is dramatic. Yeah.
It's a 180. It feels like a 180. And it's, I love the coin toss thing earlier where you can see the seeds of like badness. I think we could have used a little more of that. Sure. And we could have used a little more.
Like when he gets the crazy guy.
Yeah. And what we needed to see was that Rachel tempered that for him.
Oh, sure.
We needed to see that Rachel was the reason that he wasn't going to become a devil.
Yeah.
You know? Like, instead, Batman shows up and he's like, don't do that.
Yeah.
and you're like, oh yeah, thank goodness Batman shows up and proves that he's more virtuous, I guess. But like, what we needed to see was Ray, and it doesn't work. This doesn't work plot wise. Cause I get that. Like, it doesn't work the way they built the story because she's like sort of already captured or whatever. So, anyway, you get it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I definitely get it. I think that, I think that Harvey Dent's character and the reason that he's there is so essential to kind of the back and forth between Joker and Batman. That he needs to be there. But you're right. It is a weak point.
As I was contemplating this movie, I'm so glad you talked about all that, because as I was contemplating this movie after watching it again, I was tempted to say maybe it would be a lot better if you just took the Two-Face out because of those problems. Mm. But after hearing your kind of your argument for why it's constructed the way it is, I feel like he's totally necessary. It's just unfortunate that some of those really key emotional beats like didn't quite land.
And so I want to talk about the ending, because I think it'll solidify the importance of Two-Face at the end.
Yes.
And it solidifies the name of the movie and the reason for the name of the movie. So at the end of the movie, we're in this situation where Harvey Dent has broken out of the hospital, has killed several people, and has basically gone insane. And they got the Joker. The Joker is caught, and his plans were somewhat foiled when the fairies didn't explode, right? So because the Joker's plan was to prove not only to Batman but also to Gotham as a whole that they're fragile, and that chaos is the only like truth in the world, and that we're fooling ourselves if we think otherwise. If we think that order is what's positive, it's chaos that will reign. And so he does this. The whole plan is real, real intricate. And he does this by taking the White Knight and turning him, and like we said, and changing him into a version of what the Joker is, mm-hmm. at least shares some qualities. And so at the end of the movie, it's the perfect bow to this arc and to this story, because you have Harvey Dent, who has now died, and Batman is sitting there, and he understands, and Jim Gordon even says, the Joker won. Because Harvey Dent, who just arrested over 500 people, is the symbol of hope and justice that Gotham needs. And Batman is standing over his body thinking, if Gotham sees that Harvey Dent, the epitome of justice, has become, just like the Joker, the epitome of chaos, then he's won.
Yeah.
And so what does he do? He takes the fall.
Yeah.
He maintains Harvey's image, and he has a funeral as a hero, and Batman takes the blame as somewhat an agent of chaos, if you will, and killed some people and takes the fall, and he is the hero that Gotham needs. The Dark Knight. Y'all just heard the score go in your head, didn't you? I just heard the score in my head.
I have two more thoughts that I'd love to squeeze out.
Okay.
That's how my thoughts come out. They have to be squeezed.
Okay.
Yeah. I do this. That's why my hands are always up here on my forehead.
Like a tube of toothpaste.
Yeah. Yep, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm never sure if I'm squeezing from the middle or from the end. Anyway. Complaint number one. Well, no, not complaint number one. I have a complaint and then an observation. Complaint number one. Complaint first. The ending seems a little overwritten.
Okay.
There's a lot of emphasis on deserve and need.
Okay.
And I feel like the meaning gets lost. And so when we say he's the hero that Gotham deserves, but not the hero it needs, but he's the hero that we deserve, but we need the one we don't deserve. I feel like it gets pretty unintelligible by the end. I'm not 100% sure like what the button is. I mean, I get the idea. But like the emphasis on the word need and deserve feel a little strangely applied to me.
Are you talking just Gordon's speech?
Gordon's
essentially?
Speech, yes.
Yeah.
Because I freaking love Gary Oldman, and like he's the best Gordon ever. I mean, he's amazing, and he's better at giving that speech than anybody possibly could have been. But the speech itself feels a little tied in knots to me, because I'm thinking, what is he trying to say about Gotham? Is he trying to say that Gotham deserves better, deserves worse, deserves nothing? Is he trying to say that Gotham... I mean, I get what Gotham needs. Gotham needs a White Knight. Okay. But also Gotham needs the Dark Knight. So I feel like both Harvey Dent, the White Knight, and Batman are the hero that Gotham needs. So I'm not sure who they deserve. So you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Like, I feel like it's just a little, it's a little bit semantic. It's a little too semantic for my taste. Like,
interesting.
To end a movie on the weird sort of application of the words need and deserve feels, yeah. It feels like a really, it feels like a really pat myself on the back moment for the writer. Like, oh man, this is perfect. And then I'm watching it and I'm like, I don't understand what you're saying.
So they say that the Dark Knight is the hero that they need, not the hero they deserve.
Okay, that's what they say. So what hero do they deserve?
The way that I understood it is that they don't actually deserve a hero. Because Gotham won, right? Gotham's like the epitome of bad. But, okay, it's a trashy town.
That seems to me to sort of betray what we just saw in the third act. Because what we just saw in the third act is people... as
turning out to be good.
Christian Bale in the worst line of the movie says, I don't even remember what the words are, but people have proven that they will choose good. And I was just like, oh man, never heard a Saturday morning cartoon or Saturday morning special coming out of Christian Bale's gravelly Batman mouth. Anyway, yeah, so I feel like the whole point of the third act was to prove that Gotham is better than the Joker would have us believe.
Mm.
The people are better than the Joker would have us believe.
But
to say that they don't deserve a hero feels disingenuous. It feels sort of like it feels a little petty.
Sure.
Me,
but Jim Gordon does say that Joker won. So did I got the impression they proved that
he wins on an individual basis. He wins for – here's the thing. Okay. I'm sorry. This is actually great. This is a great segue to my second thing, which isn't a complaint, other than it's sort of kind of attached to my issues with the last couple lines of the movie. But the Joker is a jerk. The Joker is a lazy, entitled, like immature jerk. This is important.
I already disagree, but continue.
No, he is. He's an entitled, lazy jerk. He's the guy that thinks he figures it all out by becoming cynical. This is true. This is a true thing that I'm saying right now.
Yeah.
The Joker is the guy that you knew in high school and college who thinks it's all meaningless. All your ideas are stupid because people are bad. And he thinks that he has achieved the height of philosophical transcendence. He understands that everything is meaningless, and therefore he's smarter and more mature than everybody else. And what I want to point out here is that the thing that disentangles all of the Joker's like high, I'll call them high ideals, is that it's just plain easier to destroy than it is to build. It's just easier.
Sure.
It's just easier. So at the end of the day, Joker proves that it's easier to destroy than it is to build. Well, good job, Joker. You did it. Good job. Look how smart you are. Okay. Look how clever you are. Look how amazing you are.
Okay.
Well, you are. Oh, wow. Like, no one can handle your truth. Ah! It's like he's so smug about his ability to tear things down.
Yeah.
He's a terrorist. There's nothing there. Literally, he is. So I agree with absolutely everything you said.
Yeah.
He's a brilliant villain. He is a perfect embodiment of evil. He's also just a jerk. Like, at the end of the day, his philosophies don't hold up under scrutiny. They are literally proof of an obvious thing that everybody knows. It's important that Joker exists as a literary archetype because we get to see what that, and it's important that we acknowledge this too. Don't be seduced by the Joker's philosophies, because all that he proves is something you should have already known, which is that it's easier to destroy than it is to build.
Yeah.
So yes, our ideals, our morals, our systems of justice and fairness and blah blah blah, like, all that stuff is really tenuous. It's really hard to build, and it's hard to maintain, and it's hard to, like, fix when it gets broken. And the people, the good people, the heroes, the Batmans,
yeah.
and the Harvey Dents before he becomes Two-Face, like, those are the people that are working really, really hard to hold on to this effervescent thing, this thing that is so easy to break and to destroy and to, like, lose. This is the it's the cost of freedom argument, right?
Yeah.
Like, people who are free have no idea how expensive freedom is, because you live with it and you think you'd start taking it for granted. You take all these ideals for granted. So it's great to have a Joker character come through and say, "Hey, look how easily I can just blow all this up."
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, "Oh, I better realize that it's way harder to build this stuff than it is to tear it down." And so the Joker, really all he is, the only value to a character like the Joker is a reminder that we need to be careful with the fragile institutions that we build to make ourselves human and, like, transcend the sort of chaotic animal existence that the Joker is trying so hard to push forward on.
Yeah. Now, I disagree with one thing you said.
No, you don't.
I do. You said that he's lazy, and I don't think he's lazy.
No.
But that's all.
No, he's morally lazy.
He's morally lazy.
He's morally, philosophically, intellectually lazy.
And that's
a big deal.
Yeah.
Because you can be fanatics, zealots, are not lazy in terms of, like, working hard and tirelessly. That's what a fanatic is.
Yeah.
But they are lazy intellectually.
Yeah.
They're lazy where it counts. Because being able to work really, really hard at something stupid and wrong is valueless, or it's anti-value. It's destructive. It's the Joker.
Yeah.
You know, working super hard, harder than anyone, smarter than anyone, right? But also basing his entire life on a philosophy that is intellectually bankrupt.
Yeah. I mean, it is one of the reasons, I think, fundamental reasons that Batman is so popular is because the Joker explains plainly why Batman is so dedicated and so cool.
Yeah.
Real quick.
He's a great foil for all that stuff.
Yeah. Real quick. I got it backwards. He says that Batman is the hero Gotham deserves, but not the one he needs right now. So what it means, I figured it out. What it means is he's the hero that Gotham deserves, but not the one that they need right now. The hero that they need right now is the White Knight, which is Harvey Dent. That's why he's sacrificing, saying he's the one that they deserve, but the one that they need is Harvey Dent. Thus, we have to keep Harvey Dent's image.
But they also need Batman, clearly.
They do. They do.
So I feel like you proved my point. You proved my point by getting it backwards because you can defend it both ways.
You can. You're right.
Anyway,
you can. Yeah.
Listen, I love this movie.
Yeah.
I really love this movie. I will always love this movie. I think it's amazing. Anything I say against it, it's picking it. It's nitpicking.
Yeah.
In general, everything you said mainly is what I hope people come away with.
What's cool is that it's on top of all of the action that we see,
cool
gadgets, and all the things that make Batman
so
Batman.
So much fun. It's a page-turning movie.
Yeah. There's a lot of what you said that I think is going to come up in our Joker episode that I'm really excited about. That's my way of segueing into everybody listen to the next episode. Our 100th episode, we're going to have a guest on, somebody that people have requested, actually. We hear you, we get it, and he will be returning.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's a great tease. I'm excited. I'm excited. I'm so excited about this. Oh my, anyway. Okay. All right. I think that's it, right?
I think so.
Other than you should share the show with your friends.
Share the show. Check out the other shows that Real Contender has. They're popping up all over.
Yeah. Like weeds.
Just
can't get rid of them.
Can't get rid of them.
I keep yanking them up and throwing them in the trash, and they just keep popping up. There's more of them.
Yeah.
Remember to thank Michael Bondmiller.
Good catch.
Thank you, Michael Bondmiller, for this wonderful music. And CJ, what do people need to do?
They need to remember to collect movies like a nerd and rewatch them like a critic.
And cut.